written by Rehayham. Every small town has its urban legend, utilized to pass the time as the tedious years go by. My hometown of Sour Lake, Texas was no different. Last time I saw anyone excited was when a Sonic Drive-In moved into the old Pizza Hut building. I guess we tell these stories so the boredom doesn't drive us insane. What distinguishes Sour Lake from the other tiny dots on the map is the vast region of trees in our backyard. We fall right at the edge of the Big Thicket, a vast forest stretching over 40,000 miles in 5 states. There's a trail that leads out of town and into the woods. If you follow the path for half a mile, you'll run into an open clearing of grass, surrounded by giant, spindly southern live oak trees. And this is where our story begins. Texas doesn't really have seasons. It gets hot, and if you're lucky, it sometimes gets cold. But in Sour Lake, without fail, we get strong winds of gusts that signify the end of summer and the beginning of autumn. The winds are so powerful they rattle the trees, making them whisper. Legend states that if you go in the clearing around midnight, the trees will tell you a secret only you can know. The secrets are a mix of good and bad. Some learn a clue that leads to luck and fortune. Others get a premonition that leads to inevitable pain and suffering. My grandfather, always the jokester, claimed that the trees had told him my Nana had a crush on him when they were in high school. My Nana said the woods informed her of her father's impending death. They would regale my siblings and me with tales of people who suffered terrible fates and somehow always tied it to children behaving poorly. It was all a load of horseshit. My grandpa bribed my Nana's brother to retrieve her diary for him to snoop through. My great-grandpappy was close to 400 pounds and was essentially a walking heart attack. He mysteriously dropped dead when my Nana was in high school. Still, every year, a group of teenagers take the path out of town and listen to the trees. There were rules, though. The winds would blow for a week or so, so you could only receive one secret per year. Those who tried to break this rule would have their secret forfeited, and they would be cursed. You could also never disclose a secret to anyone until it happened. If you shared your secret with someone, you would again be cursed. I was never sure what the curse was, but supposedly, it was worse than death itself. I was always skeptical of the story, but was convinced by my group of friends to make the trip during the last week of September. It was 1992. I had just started my freshman year of high school and was determined to fall in with the popular crowd. At the time, that meant doing whatever anyone else was doing. Plus, the idea of sneaking out of my house past curfew gave me a huge adrenaline rush. My best friend Matt Stevens came to my bedroom window around 11:30 p.m. We walked past my parents' room and heard the loud snores of my dad, giving me the green light to leave. Matt was waiting with some of the older kids, and my new crush, Sophie Barrett. I knew I had to do something memorable to impress her. We trekked to the clearing, giggling and whispering amongst ourselves, our only light source being a weak flashlight and the dim harvest moon. I remember Johnny Polk, a smooth-talking junior, smoking cigarettes and offering drags to the other girls. Sophie laughed at his jokes the hardest. I was emboldened to make a grander first impression. Sometimes, I wonder. We soon reached the glade and laid out blankets on the grass. The giant southern live oaks formed a circle around us, the tallest at the crest of the clearing circle. Even now, those trees make me feel so small, with their long, contorting branches almost reaching out to touch you. They would have covered the sky if not for the gargantuan moon. I suddenly began to feel very unsettled. Our entire group fell silent, and you could only hear nothing but the winds approaching. The trees began to shake and rattle, swaying their branches as the gusts moved through them. Leaves sputtered down to the earth, getting caught in our hair and clothes. I closed my eyes to listen, and was surprised to hear a sound similar to whispers, though they were unintelligible. I guess this is how the legend started. I studied the tallest tree again, looming over me like my father did when I was in trouble. There was something strange about it. I couldn't quite describe it, but it was odd that the one tree was more prominent than the rest. It didn't just feel like a tree. It felt like something more. though I didn't know what. I remember hiding my face in shame to avoid the tree's gaze. I glanced over at Johnny, who was muttering something into Sophie's ear while she giggled with her hand over her mouth. My face burned with a confusing and unwanted rage. Now was my chance. I hopped up and marched towards the giant tree, ignoring the other folks as they whisper shouted at me to stop. I grabbed the first branch I could reach and began to climb, hearing the cheers and jeers from below. I arrived near the top and looked at my friends, now looking like mindless insects. I removed my shirt and tied it to the tallest branch I could reach, making my mark like Neil Armstrong did when he landed on the moon, which now seemed so close. I shuffled down the tree, basking in the hooping and hollering of the older kids.
"Jesus, that Jimmy kid is gnarly,"
one of the older guys said. Sophie ran up to me and pushed my chest.
"Jimmy Anderson, you had me worried sick."
She yelled angrily before starting to laugh. I puffed out my bare chest when I noticed Johnny Polk sulking in the corner. I sat next to Sophie for the rest of the night, looking at her as the breeze lifted her blonde hair, not knowing I was in love for the first time. We stayed a bit longer until one of Sophie's friends said she wanted to go home.
I just feel like we're being watched or something,"
she whispered, clearly rattled. We brushed her off at first, but I also remember feeling off, like we weren't the only ones in the clearing. We got up and made our way home. I walked Sophie back to her house when she asked me on the porch if the trees told me a secret. I replied no, and Sophie said she didn't either. But I remember feeling like she wasn't truthful with me. However, I didn't protest when she impulsively kissed me and hustled inside. I floated back to my house on clouds, not even caring that my parents were waiting in the kitchen to tear my ass a new one. The rest of my life began on that day. I finished high school and went to college in Houston before attending law school in Austin. I passed the bar and surprisingly found myself back in Sour Lake when the new mayor, Matt Stevens, convinced me to run for district attorney. I won in a landslide victory and moved back home. Sophie Barrett was at my side the entire time. We married shortly after the move, and she confessed to me that the trees told her that she was among her future husband that night. I laughed, thinking she was telling me a joke. Now, I'm not so sure. I've never been back to the forest clearing. After all, it was just a stupid tale to pass the time and let young adults get their first taste of independence. I was always too busy anyways, spending my days locking up drunk drivers and the occasional bar fight or indecent exposure. It was a peaceful life. I've been prosecuting cases in Sour Lake for almost 20 years now. Never once did I have a murder case on my docket. Never once did I anticipate that the darkest recesses of humanity from other cities would creep into our boring but tranquil town. But they did. Last October, Sadie Anderson, a 14-year-old freshman at Henderson High School, was found behind a dumpster near a campsite in the forest. Sadie had been stabbed over 50 times, and her body was initially unrecognizable until her poor mother identified her by the small birthmark on her shoulder. She suffered. There could be no doubt about it. The whole town was taken. No one I talked to could remember a murder, much less that of a child. We combed the entire county for every pedophile and gutter punk, but the police found nothing that could place any of them at the scene of the murder. Every hour that passed was its own personal hell. Sadie's mother checked herself into a mental facility as she was tempted to harm herself. I remember her telling me she wanted to suffer, like her daughter suffered. The investigation began to stall until 2 weeks ago when Kaylin Booker's mother found a concerning entry while snooping through her 14-year-old daughter's diary. Kaylin's journal listed a plan detailing how her friends Maddie Spears and Becca Hollis invited her out into the woods. When Kaylin arrived at the campsite one Saturday evening, Becca and Maddie were there with Sadie Anderson. The two girls then produced cheap kitchen knives purchased from the dollar store and stabbed Sadie Anderson to death. Then they forced Kaylin to help conceal the body and warned her they would do the same if she told. When questioned by police, the two girls confessed. And when asked why they would kill their friend, the girls stated plainly, "Because the trees told us to." Pandemonium ripped through Sour Lake, and parents furiously turned on the town. Children were now forbidden to go into the woods, and a permanent curfew was instituted by Mayor Stevens. Conspiracy theories and vicious rumors spreading through the town, pitting lifelong friends against each other. Thousands of dollars were spent trying to quash headlines like "Urban Legend Leads to Murder" or "A New Slender Man in Sour Lake." The girls remained steadfast and even obstinate that the trees told them to kill one of their best friends. The friend who was always kind and loyal to them. The friend who listened to their problems and helped them find solutions. Same friend who never missed a stupid birthday party or gossipy sleepover. The friend who showed them nothing but kindness and love because that's the way she was raised to treat others. I had to recuse myself from the case, of course. After all, what DA can be impartial when prosecuting his only daughter's killers? The girls have now refused to cooperate with law enforcement. One of my colleagues, a lawyer from Beaumont, has been assigned to the case. He's recommended placing both the girls in an institution until their 21st birthday and making all this go away quietly. I am too numb to feel anything about the deal. All I can think about is Becca and Maddie staring straight into my soul with dead, unflinching eyes in their arraignments. One of them seemed to smirk. I'm sitting alone with the TV on for background noise. My oldest son, back from college, stares into space, checking his phone to see if his mother called. My middle son, a high school junior, is locked in his room. I can feel his anger and confusion seeping down the staircase. I don't know how to talk to him. I get up and leave the house without anyone noticing. I follow the path into the woods as the sweltering May heat sticks my shirt to my skin. There will be no autumn winds tonight. I enter the clearing and sit down on the grass. I can feel the weight of the trees circling around me, leaning in to scrutinize me after all these years. The moon shines above me, bearing witness in its crescent phase as if it's hiding behind a corner. I light a cigarette, let the flame of the lighter dance on my palm. The giant tree I climbed all those years ago stares down on me like a judge on the bench. Its branches slowly sway in the slight breeze, cracking and moaning as if it's taunting me. I close my eyes and listen to the forest hum. My ears begin to twitch. I think I hear, faintly, in the distance. I nod somberly. In these woods, the trees whisper. Tonight, they'll scream.
Thank you for listening. You can handle another horror story. Right.